Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book podcast. We do manga and graphic novels and all sorts of other stuff as well. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew.
That's right, that's why you don't introduce.
Why?
Because we had a spiel. We had a spiel that I've spent literally minutes thinking of. And you just threw it in the trash.
I forgot what the spiel was. I've been away for 3 weeks.
And in that time, you've been listening to every episode we put out, right? So you know about our new innovative review system.
Oh, you're on about it's a sin, put it in the bin type stuff.
Yes, exactly. Everything is now in rhyme, just like the Demon Etrigan.
Okay, right. We're not going back to the Nightwing Butts then.
No, Nightwing Butts is an antiquated system for an older age. A more civilized era, if you will.
Yes. Oh, right. So anyway, it was Free Comic Book Day.
It was.
And as is traditional, we are going to be going through as many of them as we can in the time that we have.
Yeah, basically just using this as kind of a little sneak peek as to what all the various comic companies are going to be putting out in the next few months or years.
Yep. So, do you want to go first, Andrew?
Yeah, and I may as well kick us off with the big un, because did DC even do a... I assume DC did some kind of free comic book this year.
Yes, they did. It was called Dear Justice League, which I was going to kick off with.
Oh, that's right. You've got... Yeah. Well, I may as well kick things off with Marvel then, shall I?
Yes.
Yeah, so I have been reading the Avengers Free Comic Book Day special and the Spider-Man Free Comic Book special.
The who?
Spider-Man.
Oh, Spider-Man. Not Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Yes. The Amazing Spider-Man. But anyway, Avengers, it's pretty much just, if you've been reading the Jason Aaron run, letting you know what's been going on with that. So it's basically just a primer setting up the Namor and his... Atlanteans, they've now turned against humanity. They're trying to, like, basically save the oceans from all the pollution, ripping up rocks and oil rigs and stuff, which I guess theoretically makes them villains, but... And Iron Man's gone back in time and he's going to meet the Avengers of 1 million BC, that thing that Jason Aaron keeps reminding us about and they're not doing anything with.
There are Avengers in 1 million BC?
Yeah. Yeah, where it's Odin and Phoenix and Iron Fist and Ghost Rider's got a woolly mammoth. But he never rides it. You tease, Jason Aaron. You tease and your fiery mammoth. Anyway, also Black Panther's got to do an exorcism on Ghost Rider's car. Because it's too ghosty, Rob.
There was a sharp left turn there. It went from Ghost Rider not riding a mammoth to Black Panther... doing an exorcism on Ghost Rider's car.
Indeed. And speaking of left turns, we cut back to Namor doing his thing on the rocks and oil rig when Earth's mightiest heroes arrive to save the day. I, of course, mean the Squadron Supreme.
Oh, you're on about, like, Hyperion and that?
Yeah, like Hyperion, Nighthawk, Dr. Spectrum, Blur, and... oh, man, I can't remember what I think it's like. Princess Power?
What, She-Ra?
Yes, She-Ra. She-Ra is a Marvel superhero now.
Well, she is the Princess of Power, isn't she?
But no, this is the team that's got a very obviously the Justice League. And I like just how ridiculously over the top Jason Aaron's gone with it. Because the Squadron Supreme, and I like... the government-sponsored superhero team operating out of Washington, D.C. Do you get it, Rob? They're D.C.'s greatest heroes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a fun gag that I always enjoy. But yeah, it's basically just this is what's been going on with Avengers. This is what's going to be going on afterwards. I think that book's kind of just been getting things warmed up for after War of the Realms is finished.
Yeah, War of the Realms is dragging a bit now, isn't it?
Yeah. It's only just started. Like, only a few weeks into it.
Hang on. Really?
Yeah, really.
War of the Realms is the whole Malekith thing, isn't it?
Yeah, him invading Earth.
But didn't he already start the War of the Realms when Jane Foster was Thor? Which was like 2 years ago.
No, that was the prelude to the War of the Realms.
How long was the bloody prelude?
A while. Because the whole point, this has been building in the background.
I'm really confused now. Because I thought the War of the Realms was already going on and had been going on for a while.
Yeah, that's... No, that's the War of the Realms lowercase. This is War of the Realms uppercase, as in the comic event.
But Jane Foster had to fight the Shi'ar gods.
Yes. Anyway, there's also a backup about the new Savage Avengers team, which is like Wolverine and Punisher and Elektra and some other people, I don't know. I'm not that fussed about that book, so whatever. Which may be a recurring segment in this episode.
Maybe, maybe.
Anyway, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. And apparently whatever a spider can also involves being the backup feature in a comic book that's mostly about Venom, actually. Oh, I guess it's more half and half.
Yeah, but that Venom, he's going to get him.
Oh, Venom. Anyway, basically the Venom's just setting up something about... It's their new Spider-Man event they're doing, where it's Carnage and he's got the god of the symbiote and he's going to free it from the bad planet, but he's got to collect all the other symbiotes so that he can use the Dragon Balls to make his big wish, and it's very comic event. Villain wants to get the MacGuffin. We got to stop him getting the MacGuffin. He'll probably get the MacGuffin, but then the heroes will stop him doing the bad thing anyway. There is a fun second story, though, about Peter and Miles just having an argument over who does the best pizza.
See, that's the kind of thing I'd expect from Peter and Miles.
That's my favourite thing on Free Comic Book Day, when you get something that's actually just like a nice standalone story, rather than a glorified advert.
Yeah. And God knows we've read enough of those glorified adverts.
Yeah, because that is the predominant thrust of Free Comic Book Day.
Do you remember the one about Western Union?
That was literally an advert.
I know. Oh, it was bad. Shall I take over now?
Yep, tell me about DC shenanigans.
Well, DC have done something that's a little bit left field and a little bit interesting with their Justice League. Now, you gave this to me, and I looked at it, and my first thought was, is this points of view for the Justice League? Because if it is, I am definitely in. And you know what? Kind of is. I think this is possibly one of the more delightful Justice League comics that I've read in a long, long, long time. And I would happily go and read the rest of this. It's called Dear Justice League. It's by the New York Times best-selling author Michael Northrup, with art by Gustavo Duarte. And it features two chapters from the upcoming graphic novel. And the first chapter is all about Superman. And Superman is the Man of Steel. He's all-powerful. He's from a far-off planet. And he can bend metal, crush diamonds, shoot lasers from his eyes, see through walls, and fly at the speed of light. But he gets an email from a young boy called Ben Silsby, who is his non-super fan.
Wait a minute. Can't we all see at the speed of light?
No, he can fly at the speed of light.
I don't know. What do you expect? I'm listening to things you say. You know how the show works, Rob.
I know. Anyway, Ben Silsby, young Ben Silsby, has just had a major accident. His accident involves a hosepipe, a lawnmower, and lots of mud. And he sends Superman an email on his phone saying, Dear Superman, you're super, right? I mean, it's right there in your name. But are you super all the time? What I mean is, have you ever messed up? I mean, big time, because I have big time.
Just like that one bit in IT Crowd where Moss sends an email to the fire department because the office is on fire.
Basically, yeah. Anyway, Superman gets the email while he's flying. Now, you shouldn't be checking your emails while you're flying because that could lead to accidents. Which is basically what happens next when he flies straight into a building and a series of small accidents occurs that could end in catastrophe, but don't, because Superman saves the day. And the dogs, and the cats, and the people, and various other things before finally getting a ticket from a local police officer saying he's got an infraction for texting while flying.
You are not selling this to me, Rob.
Well, I said it's delightful, but it's definitely not aimed at a more mature audience. This is definitely one for the kids, right? The next story is about Hawk Girl, who is in this, Kendra Saunders, and she has just finished from a day of bashing insects, and she decides to go online 3 hours later. She's still online, decides to check her emails. She gets an email saying, "Dear Hawk Girl, hawks eat small mammals. Do you? Sincerely, Haley Lou." She looks at her hamster and then feeds the hamster and replies, "I don't eat small animals, I feed small mammals."
Counterpoint.
Yes.
Probably does eat small mammals, just, you know, ones that have been, like, cooked and prepared in some kind of meal.
Yeah. The reason why I'm looking forward to this is because it's got very simple, straightforward questions, that the kind of questions that I'd expect, like, my six-year-old niece to ask. For example, with Superman, does he ever make mistakes? For Batman, have you ever been the new kid in town? For Wonder Woman, what was your 11th birthday like? For Cyborg, what's your favourite video game? And the best one is Aquaman. Does Aquaman smell like fish? Which is a question I think all of us have asked at one
point. Does he, though?
It's a question all of us have asked.
Surely he must.
We've all asked the question. You know it.
God, especially back in the day of shirtless Aquaman.
Yep.
Because he was definitely also fairly hairy, so God, just fish stink all in his matted beard.
I'm going to leave it there. You can take over.
I mean, I'm going to need a minute, because you know, just when there's a question that absolutely smashes straight through you.
Yep. I mean, I've honestly asked that question of Namor before. Does Namor smell of fish?
Okay, well, one sec. I'm just going to put aside the one I was going to do next, because I feel like I probably want to do that at a different point now.
I've derailed the plan.
So, something else I've been reading from Fantagraphics Books is Our Favourite Thing is My Favourite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris.
Ooh, this sounds interesting.
So, this is a little companion piece to the book My Favourite Thing is Monsters, which came out last year. But it's been very well received. I think I definitely need to read that at some point. And yeah, this is just the author, again, Emil Ferris, providing a couple of stories. The first is a nice little inspirational tale of how she got bitten by a mosquito and came down with West Nile virus, meningitis, and encephalitis.
Okay.
And basically, after months being hospitalized, she kind of found herself unable to draw. But then, with the help of her daughter, she kind of slowly got her skills back and went on to a career as a successful comic book artist. And then we also get I think it's not a bit from the book. I think it's kind of a new piece to go alongside My Favorite Thing of is Monsters, just about kind of the protagonist Katie and her brother. It's technically quite a dark story, because it's basically about her brother, who's implied to be some kind of neighborhood tough sort, maybe even a pimp, kind of chasing kind of a rival out of town. But it's kind of delightful because it's also mixed up with Katie, I think it might be Karen, her kind of slightly weird worldview, where she sees herself as like a little werewolf child, and it kind of a thing about how her mother told her never to talk to women of the night, and so she just automatically assumes they're all vampires. And it's just kind of, it's a little undercurrent of sadness, but it's also really nice and sweet, and I like the weird kind of, because it looks like it's just all drawn in like a kid's notebook. And it's got me, yeah, it's got me really wanting to check out My Favourite Thing is Monsters. Which, well, you've suckered me in, comic book. But yeah, this was good. I mean, again, it was a good balance.
Yeah.
Because it's advertised the work that it's from, but it's also given me enough content that I feel like I've got something out of this. It also involves Mothman.
What, the one from the prophecies?
The same one. You can say things now, Rob.
I was going to, but, you know, he... Doesn't the Mothman, like, wipe things from existence?
I don't think so.
I get confused between the Mothman and some other mythical figure.
I don't remember that from, like, early 2000s horror thriller The Mothman Prophecies.
Oh, was that that one starring Richard Gere?
It was indeed.
The one where he was basically doing his best officer and a gentleman in a horror movie.
Yeah, and literally that entire film was, there's a Mothman. He does prophecies. I don't know. Oh, there is. He done a prophecy, the Mothman did.
Yes. So how do we know that it's a real prophecy? Well, if you hold up a light, he flies towards it.
That was my first horror film.
Oh, poo-hoo.
I'm not sure why I'm a horror fan, to be honest.
That was your first one. That's so bad. I don't know what to say. That's just, oh, that's so sad.
I feel like it also massively backfired later on when I was like, oh, is this all horror is? That's not that scary. What's this? I don't know. A razor head? That sounds it's cool. Oh, it's a video.
Yes.
With the baby. And, oh.
Anyway. Moving away from Eraserhead to something that is becoming a tradition for me on Free Comic Book Day, which is there will definitely be a Lady Mechanica issue of some sort, and I will definitely be covering it.
And I allowed you to, because I'm good like that.
Yes, I know, and I thank you for it. Because Lady Mechanica is, well, she's kind of hot. Let's be fair. But anyway, Lady Mechanica is absolutely wonderful as a character and as a concept. I think it's brilliant. This is actually several snippets of stories from several different story arcs in Lady Mechanica. The first one is The Demon of Satan's Alley, which I've actually covered before on Free Comic Book Day, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about because it's about a little demon who gets his head blown off, yada yada.
A little demon who lives in Satan's Alley.
I'm not saying a word. You said it, not me.
See, one of these days I'm going to be a mature enough adult not to laugh at things like this.
Yeah, I know.
But it's not today. It's not today at all.
No, it's not. The next snippet is the introduction to a story called The Clockwork Assassin. That one has an acquaintance of Lady Mechanica's being killed. The most recent death of somebody who is dressed very similarly to Mechanica. And the police are suspecting that Mechanica may be the assassin. And the third story is La Belle Dame Sans Merci. My French pronunciation is horrible, so I apologize to all of France. No, I don't.
That's good. That's smashing those cultural stereotypes.
Yeah. But anyway, it's about her close friend and associate, Mr. Lewis, who is going through a pretty bad patch because of things that happened with his family, until Mechanica comes back to find him disturbingly enamoured with a young widow whose past is linked to the untimely deaths of several creative geniuses.
Mysterious.
Yes, very mysterious. Lady Mechanica, obviously, is the creation of Joe Benitez, and it's such a great, unusual comic book standalone thing. It's so different to everything else that's pretty much out there. If you liked stuff like Gotham by Gaslight and stuff like that, then you're going to love Lady Mechanica. It's very steampunk. It's very Victorian. It's got all of the horror elements. Do you know what I'd pair this with? I would love to see a comic book where Lady Mechanica and Hellboy actually meet.
Yeah, that works well. I can see that.
Do you see what I mean? I think that would be an amazing kind of pairing, an amazing dynamic duo type thing.
Yeah, I can certainly see it.
So, over to you, Andrew.
Yep, back to me. Okay, I've been reading H1 Ignition, which is hot and fresh out the kitchen. It's Humanoids New. Yeah, I thought you'd like that. It's Humanoids New line that they're launching, so this is kind of just a series of previews for all the new books they're launching. And to be honest, I've got to say, fairly underwhelmed. Because going through some of them, we've got The Big Country, which seems to be just a story about a Texas sheriff in the 1970s, which, I mean, could be fun. It just sounds very... I mean, here's one of this. It's about a bad cop who is certain he is good, chasing a killer who knows he's bad but trying to do something good. Just doesn't necessarily sound anything that we haven't seen that much of before. However, it is written by a man called Quinton Peoples. Quinton Peoples. P-E-E-P-L-E-S. Rob, his name is Quinton Peoples.
I know. I'm still Quinton processing. Quinton Peoples. I'm processing. Give me a chance. There are so many things that I want to say.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've seen. And one of the other books in this is called Nick Nevin and the Bloody Queen.
Now I have more questions than answers.
She's a witch girl.
So why is he called Nick Nevins?
Because her name is Nick Nevin Oswald.
Nick Nevin Oswald?
Yeah.
Is she Welsh? Isn't Nevin a Welsh surname?
No. Her name is Nick Nevin. N-I-C-N-E-V-I-N.
Yeah, isn't Nevin a Welsh surname?
Yeah, but that's not how names work, Rob.
I just thought it might be interesting if she met the Bloody Queen and goes, Yakida.
But no, she's actually from somewhere in the north of England. The book wasn't more specific than that. But that's cool. That's cool. Helen Mullane, Dom Reardon, Matthew Dowsmith, Lee Loudridge and Jock, that you're doing something set in the north.
Yes.
Then we also have... Just the one thing that I did think sounded pretty cool. It's by Jonathan Lang, Andrea Mutti, Andrei Szymanowicz, and Sean Martinborough. It's a series called Mayor, about retired Jewish mobster Mayor Lansky trying to organise one last con job in Florida. And they kind of put it as being inspired by things like Breaking Bad and Coen Brothers movies.
See, that sounds pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, that definitely has some scope to be an interesting series. So that's kind of the more crime side of things. They've also got a whole interconnected superhero thing, which, I don't know, none of which grabbed me. Because the first one we're introduced to is Omni, which is written by Devin Grayson with art by Ariella Christantina and Brian Valenza. And I think the problem is it's about a character whose superpower is superintelligence. But it's set in kind of a more grounded real world. So I think that's kind of a hard power to show off. Like, if you're not making sort of crazy Reed Richards, we're going to explore alternate dimensions machines.
So he's basically Megamind, isn't he?
She.
Sorry.
No, she's just good at thinking fast, basically. Yeah, it's just, it doesn't really, it's hard to show how that separates her from being just someone who's good at thinking.
See, that just reminds me of, you remember that amazing sight gag that you wanted to happen in the X-Men movies? Where you had like...
Yes, where it's like Jean Grey and Mastermind just kind of staring at each other.
Yes.
Yeah, if only it was that. But no, it's... Cause in the preview, I'm not even sure what she does. She kind of like alerts the police that a bank robber's getting away. And I guess the idea is she can like calculate the path he's going to take or something. I don't know, I didn't much care for that one. Then there's also Strange Lands, written by Mags Izaggio, with art by Darcy Little Badger and inks by Vanessa Del Rey, which is about Adam Land and Alakshi Land, no relation, two strangers who meet while on vacation and then discover that they need to be bonded together because one has the power to, like, attract things with magnetism, the other has power to repel them. If they get too far apart, the powers go haywire. So now they've got to go on the run from the government. And it's just looks very kind of heroesy.
It's a bit Cloak and Dagger meets Marcy Menos, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's basically, as we say, stuff that I feel like I've seen elsewhere plenty of.
Yeah. The thing is, when you said they've got to be bonded together, my first thought was Mossy Manos from the Teen Titans cartoon.
Yeah, they run fast when they hold hands.
Yeah.
Oh, Teen Titans cartoon, you're too good for this sinful earth. Right. So now we have the last series coming out of H1. And this is Ignited, written by Mark Wade. And Mark Wade and Kwanza Osagiefo, with art by Phil Bryanes. And it's about a group of teens with superpowers who want to make the world a better place. And do you know how they get these powers, Rob?
I'm guessing it's something that really shouldn't have been put in a comic book.
Their powers manifest through when they undergo extreme trauma. In this case, when they survive a school shooting.
Yeah. Something that shouldn't have been put in a comic book.
Yeah, this is very... I get that Mark Weed is someone who is he's very socially aware. And I get that he wants to kind of make books that reflect current social issues. But you're not the guy who should be doing it, Mark Wade.
Yeah.
And especially, I feel like very serious real world issues in like goofy superhero comics. That's a hard line to walk, and it very often goes very badly wrong. And this is just, oh no, bad times.
Yep.
Don't make this book, Mark Wade. Please realize this is a bad idea and stop. Because, like, this isn't just bad and awkward, like we're saying. This also could potentially be very psychologically harmful to people. Because this is an issue that needs to be handled with the utmost nuance and care and respect. And I feel like a late 50s-year-old white man is not the one to be doing it.
Not only that. It's a comic book where the solution to things is punching other people in the face.
Yeah, it's very, like, you can't just put it in this very unrealistic, sort of very morally black and white world.
Yeah, because it's never morally black and white.
No, it isn't. So that's very bad. Let's move on to something else.
Speaking of black and white, you gave me, from Aftershock Comics, Animosity Tales.
I mean, you say I gave you, I say threw lots of things on the air, I'm not that first pile.
Or rather, you left it on the pile and gave me the pile.
Yes.
Now that I say it out loud, sounds very different to how it sounded in my head.
You have to take them, Rob. Take all my piles.
Anyway, this is by Marguerite Bennett, with art by Elton Thomas, colours by Marco Lesko, and letters by Marshall Dillon. And the covers by Rafael De La Torre with Marcello Maiolo. And this starts off with the lines, "One day, all the animals woke up. They started thinking. They started talking. They started taking revenge. Then, shit got weird." And I'm using the word shit because it's got the, you know, the symbols that they do in comics. And then the scene shifts to the waterweed castle of Prince Neon, who's saying, "At last, the day of ascension is at hand. Begone, my lonely nights, deprived of all warmth and companionship. All that waits now is my beautiful beloved." The princess, who is about to be attacked by some kind of giant canine creature that she befriends. And then the scene shifts again to show that Prince Neon is actually a goldfish in an aquarium. And his princess is a human who is... Well, basically, she's a student at a university, and the dog is basically a stray dog that she picked up.
Oh, good. We're getting a sequel to The Shape of Water.
Basically, yeah. Prince Neon is her pet goldfish, and she is now his entire world, and has been for the last 4 minutes since he gained sentience.
That's cute. I like that.
Yeah. It says, So, I've been self-aware for the last 4 minutes, and during that time I realised that, one, you are literally my whole world, and two, I want to make you happy and give you all the love you don't think you deserve.
Oh, Prince Neon.
He's a goldfish, but he's adorable.
You softy.
But the thing is, the world is going to hell in a handcart because all the animals are fighting back now. And so Prince Neon's potential bride-to-be, and the thing is, when it goes to Prince Neon's delusions, it takes on this kind of fantasy hero-type artistry where he's, you know, he's dressed in armor with a sword and long flowing locks and stuff like that.
But he's still a fish.
But he's still a fish.
Excellent.
It moves on from there to Prince Neon's bride-to-be. If I remember rightly, her name is Meredith. And she dons her armor, which is basically like American football shoulder pads, puts Prince Neon in a ball with a cap and glasses on, and wielding a hockey stick, goes to save her friends who are also fishes and various other creatures like that. And the world is going to literal nonsense.
I mean, I feel like you've already let the cat out of the bag with regards to the swearing words.
Yeah, people are basically getting killed left, right, and centre. But it all happens off screen. Remember I did Rover and Charlie? Damn it, I always get confused between Mark Miller, Warren Ellis, and Garth Ennis.
Which is weird, because two of those are terrible and one of them isn't.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, no, sorry. Two of those are terrible and one of them is Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
Just to be crystal clear here.
I think Warren Ellis was the one who did Rover and Charlie, where the dogs were basically... All the humans had suddenly become like... they'd lost the ability to think and become like animals and were killing each other and dying. And
was there a part where the animals stopped what they were doing for a while to make a really on-the-nose comment about the inherent stupidness of superhero comics?
No.
Okay, it definitely wasn't Millar or Ennis then. It must have been Ellis.
Yeah, that's why I said I think it was Warren Ellis. There is an interesting little double-page spread in this called The Path to the Doghouse. It basically gives a synopsis of the first four volumes of Animosity, which is the main series, I'm assuming, for this. This is Animosity Tales, which I think is more side stories associated with the main series. And so that made for interesting reading. And then it has another little bit in here from Mary Shelley, Monster Hunter, which has Mary and her and other people going to this house, and there are body parts lying around and drops of blood, and there's a big mystery to solve. Will Mary be able to solve the mystery?
No.
I have to say, of the two, Animosity Tales is the better one. Kind of did remind me of Rover and Charlie, but also kind of reminded me of Beasts of Burden as well.
Yeah, plus I feel like historical figure is actually some kind of monster hunter is a really weirdly played out subgenre by now.
It's bizarre how played out it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such an odd specific niche to have been so completely filled.
It's like saying Genghis Khan, dinosaur hunter.
I mean, is this a, have we hit like the broken clock is right twice a day moment where you accidentally unearth gold?
I think we have, because Genghis Khan Dinosaur Hunter is like the best movie that's never been made.
Right? Like, they go on their conquest and they uncover some kind of like savage land area where the dinosaurs were never wiped out.
Yeah.
Seems sad now because no real movie will ever live up to Genghis Khan Dinosaur Hunter. God damn it, Rob. I'm going to see Detective Pikachu next week and you've ruined it now. You've ruined it now because it's not Genghis Khan Dinosaur Hunter.
I'm sorry, but that just suddenly came out. I don't know. I had one of those weird moments of clarity where the universe just aligned for that split second.
I think like Pluto is in alignment with Venus or something tonight.
Anyway, over to you.
Yep. So I've been reading Images Free Comic Book Day. It's a Spawn free comic book.
A what?
Spawn. You know Spawn.
Yeah, I know Spawn. When you said it's a Spawn free comic book, I thought, hang on, is Spawn in it or not then?
Oh, I see. I see what you... Yeah, that's in the same neighbourhood as a joke.
I know.
So yeah, this is to celebrate the release of Spawn issue 300 coming August 2019. And do you know what kind of weird little promo thing they've done?
Go ahead.
Not a weird little promo thing at all. They've just friggin' reprinted Spawn issue 1 written and drawn by Todd McFarlane, letters by Tom Orzechowski, colours by Steve Orliffe, cover by Francesco Martina, which, to be fair, I think that might be a new bit. But yeah, it's just a friggin' Spawn issue one.
Thing is, Spawn issue one, okay, they've reprinted it. That's the kind of comic book reprint I would like on Free Comic Book Day.
Heck yeah, it is. This absolutely made my day when I opened it up and just realised, oh my god, this is just Spawn.
Yeah.
I don't belong. Not here, not now. I have to get back there. The bet was rigged. He made me believe. Now there's darkness in my soul. I want to die. Again.
See, this is the thing. That's what you want on Free Comic Book Day when they do these first issue reprints. Something from so long ago that people kind of take it for granted that it exists now or don't even think about it. So when it appears on Free Comic Book Day, you've got that excitement. You open it up and you go, oh my god, this is the first issue. This is the first issue from like 1990 whatever or 1980 whatever.
I don't know, it's great just like opening that first page and just an explosion of like dark, gritty 90s grunge covers your entire face. It's, oh my god, I feel like I knew I liked Spawn, but I feel like I'd forgotten it. Like just how much of a kind of pivotal cornerstone of my early comics reading this book was.
See? That's what you want from Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, because it's also, because I know everyone, us included, likes to make lots of jokes about, you know, the 90s being all shoulder pads and chains and skulls and stuff. But this is the book that makes it work.
That's what I was about to say. Spawn was kind of the exception rather than the rule. Spawn was designed specifically for all of that stuff. All of the chains and shoulder pads and pouches and stuff, they actually came because everyone tried copying Spawn, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like when you build your world around this like very specific aesthetic, instead of going, okay, but what if we just gave the X-Men guns?
Yeah.
Like, then it works. Especially with Todd McFarlane's page layouts, because god damn.
Oh, he was very, very good.
He has just all like the weird kind of panels fading in and out of focus as Spawn's memories sort of grow and decline.
See, that's the thing that I really don't see in comics these days, is them playing with the actual panels. I see it in manga, but I don't see it in superhero comics. I think it seems to be a dying art, actually using the panels as part of the narrative, as part of the storytelling.
I don't know if it's a dying art. I would say it's one of those things that maybe occurs in peaks and troughs, because it's always kind of allowing artist experimentation versus trying to enforce a house style. And I feel like they do one for a while until sales start to decline, so they'll switch to the other. And that just goes up and down. God, there's like a bit where there's like, it's side-by-side panels of like newsreaders, but also like the middle bit's kind of flicking through the various channels as it goes through each of them. God, it's so good.
That's what I'm talking about, though. I'm tired of all the rectangles and squares. It's all rectangular and square panels.
Yeah, well, this is like all weird, like janky edges to things, and Spawn as a cape, which is exactly as long as the dramatic needs of the scene need it to be.
Which they tried to do with Batman during the 90s and failed. I remember the Batman seemed to have a cape that he could bunch up and kind of hook over one arm and still be long enough to hit the floor. You're like, hang on, are you not going to trip over that? Is it some kind of wedding veil or something?
Yeah. I mean, at least Spawn, like, his costume is basically sort of like Venom, so you can say, oh, it's just shape-shifting.
Yeah. But with Batman, no, that's definitely cloth.
To be fair, I guess you can also say with Spawn, oh, that's because it looks freaking cool as hell.
Yes.
All these emotions I'd forgotten, Rob. I think I've been asleep for so long, and what I've really needed is just for something to wake me up inside. Can't wake up.
So, shall I continue then?
I swear to God, I'm just going to play Evanescence on repeat from now on.
I think I'm going to destroy that. Delusion.
Going to buy some big cargo pants. Wear a chain on them.
Well, just remind me.
Wear a long sleeve shirt under my t-shirt. The 90s are back.
I can't remember if this was originally an Image property that is now gone to Valiant or not.
I don't know. I think my body might have uncovered some kind of long-lost pixie stick cavity that I had hidden in there. Oh, I'm loopy on the 90s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I remember this character from the 90s vaguely, or somebody who looked a lot like him and had a very similar name. This is from Valiant Comics, and this is Bloodshot.
Oh, Bloodshot.
Bloodshot was from the 90s as well, wasn't he?
He was so 90s, wasn't he? I feel like the problem is that Bloodshot is basically like every character.
Do you know what Bloodshot is more than every character, though? Bloodshot's bloody rogue trooper.
He's so rogue. But yeah, but that's what, like, there were so many 90s characters who were basically just rogue trooper, but a different colour.
Yeah, and then there was that awful Kurt Russell movie called Soldier, and Bloodshot kind of reminds me of rogue trooper crossed with Soldier, just with a big red circle on his chest like a target. This is the Free Comic Book Day Bloodshot, which has Bloodshot 2019 Prelude, and then a Bloodshot interview with Tim Seeley, Fallen World Prelude, which is written by Dan Abnett. Oh, by the way, Tim Seeley wrote Bloodshot 2019 Prelude as well.
Oh, did he now?
Yep. Fallen World interview with Dan Abnett, and Psylord's interview with Fred Van Lente. And this is basically a typical Bloodshot story where he comes along, rescues the innocent people. He's powered by innocence, apparently. That raises his power levels, and he fights for innocence and justice and truth and the American way. No, he's not Superman. But apparently Bloodshot has a drive so strong that he has cast aside a normal life to pursue it, always driven in the end to sacrifice himself for a greater cause, the cause of innocence.
This is the same Tim Seeley who wrote the very good Shatterstar miniseries.
Yes.
Tim.
Yeah, then it goes on to Fallen World, which somehow is also associated with Bloodshot, maybe. But I think Fallen World is one of those odd sci-fi things. You've got a guy with a red dot on his head who seems to be telling people what to do, and other people don't want that guy with the red dot on his head telling people what to do, so, yeah.
Freaky deaky.
Yep.
That sounds very much one of those, we don't really read Valiant comics, and so have no idea what's going on.
It is, because the Fallen World is something like a 41st century war, which apparently kicks off after a pretty dramatic status quo change for the Valiant universe of the year 4002. And then the Psylords thing, which is just an interview. The Psylords are sort of the lost clan of the Valiant universe, both in story terms and in publishing history. And that's a bit of an oddity. I don't really read the Valiant comics that much. I'm not really familiar with the Valiant universe, with characters like Exo, Manowar, and Bloodshot, and Harbinger, and Shadow Man or Shadow Man?
Oh my god, it's like the last year didn't even happen. We're back at Shadow Man again.
And Quantum and Woody and Ninjak. Or Ninja K. Is it Ninjak or is it Ninja K?
I think it's Ninjak. To be fair, from like the Free Comic Book stuff I've read, the Valiant comics do seem kind of interesting, and I would like to check them out one day.
Yeah.
It's just, do you know that comics both cost money and take time to read?
Yeah.
That's a real inconvenience.
We also have, for Valiant Comics, if you're listening, anyone from Valiant Comics, do the crossover that you really want to do with Ninjak. You know you want this crossover. Ninjak meets Samurai Jack.
Actually, you know what? Valiant must have been around in this, because there was an Exo Manowar and Iron Man video game.
Oh god, yes, there was, wasn't there?
So there we go. Definitive proof. I feel like Indiana Jones.
Your turn.
Yep, let's go to Dark Horse Comics. And oh, Dark Horse, you sneaky, sneaky snurtsons of guns. Giving me that good Black Hammer content that I want a lot. But putting it after a Stranger Things story. Anyway, Stranger Things, The Game Master. It's written by Jody Houser with art by Ibrahim Mustafa, colours by Triona Farrell, and letters by Nate Picos of Blambot. And it's, to be fair, it's a fairly nice little story. It's kind of just after season one of Stranger Things. It's about Mike getting over the fact that Eleven's Vanish did, and his best friend's back, but he's all weird and sad now, and kind of getting over that, and sort of teaching a fun lesson about how you help your friends with trauma. So I think, if you like Stranger Things, you'll probably enjoy it. I didn't care. What I did care, though, was the Black Hammer story, because this was very fun. It's basically set inside Lady Dragonfly's cabin, which is this very sort of old school House of Mystery, Tales from the Crypt type place.
Mm.
And it's kind of introduced with the whole full on kind of, ah, dear readers, come in, come in. I see that gleam in your eye. You're here in search of a story, aren't you? And we basically get a few previews for things. So we get a little flashback to the Black Hammer Squadron, which is a squadron of World War II fighter pilots fighting Nazi werewolves. And that's setting up the new kind of side series, Black Hammer 45, which is a World War II book. And yeah, looks pretty fun. And then we also get a cameo from my favourite Black Hammer character, Jack Sabbath, the awesomely named Dead Man ripoff.
You do like Jack Sabbath.
It's just such a good name. So yeah, he's basically found a book. Well, Jack Sabbath thinks that he's been dead for centuries, but also, while on his explorations, has found a comic book dated from 1985 with him on the cover, and he needs to unravel the mystery of what's going on. So yeah, that's just a little... I'll admit, I am slightly annoyed that it's just, here's some things that are going to be happening in Black Hammer books.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as always, I'm happy with any Black Hammer. But like an actual nice little one-shot story, I would have preferred.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the kind of world where you easily could have just dropped in a story from the world of Black Hammer.
Well, that's the thing. Black Hammer's been designed that way, so I don't understand why they wouldn't just do that.
I think it's probably because they needed to give space to bloody Stranger Things.
Yeah. Speaking of Stranger Things, Interceptor from Vault Comics. And this is actually an oddity for me. Right, I don't know anything about Vault Comics. I'm not familiar with them. I don't know any of their other titles.
All I know is that the cover to this comic book had a, well, was a very suggestive cover.
Kind of is.
The character just thrusting their big old long hard motorbike into a monster's face.
Yeah, it kind of is. But yeah, some of the stuff from Vault, you got Reactor, which has hashtag death before undead as a tag for it. Don't know why, don't know what Reactor is about, and it's got more Interceptor. Now, Interceptor is a bit of an odd dog. This is the first issue of Interceptor, which is actually written by Donny Cates, and it's illustrated by Dylan Burnett, with letters by Taylor Esposito, and the story editor is Seamus Martin, and the variant covers by Daniel Warren Johnson. And this first issue is called Leathers, and it deals with humans who have fled planet Earth. But the story that the government has given the humans is different to the story that the government knows. See, the government said that it was because of human pollution and population and stuff like that, that they had to leave planet Earth. What actually happened was that they polluted the planet so badly that the vampires came out and started fighting back. And the humans basically were pushed to the brink by the vampires. The vampires now rule Earth, or what's left of Earth, after humans left, they decided to nuke the planet. And now the vampires have become intelligent and more technologically advanced, and they've found where the humans are. So the humans have to launch a preemptive strike, and so they send a soldier to Earth to basically fight for them. And this soldier is basically... Well, you remember Samus from Metroid?
Yep.
Imagine Samus from Metroid, but as a comic book, and as kind of Makoto Kusanagi a little bit, with extra armor and all sorts of weaponry and anti-vampire things. It's kind of a Blade scenario, a world full of vampires and one person to kill them all. But what happens is they find that humans have been left behind on Earth. Not all humans left planet Earth. And so the truth may start coming out, but in the meantime, you have this soldier who now has to fight a horde of vampires. I'll be honest, it didn't really grab my attention. The cover was very interesting, but the rest of it really failed to grab my attention. It's one of those situations where you kind of have some really good vampire stuff in the media already, or in general media already, in the form of TV shows or books or movies or other comic books. This just doesn't, it doesn't sing, it doesn't do anything, it's just kind of there.
Yeah, it sounds like it's something that's maybe not as clever as it thinks it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's blatantly taking ideas from other things.
Yeah, it's just, it sounds very, but what if humans were the real monster? But no one's thought of that.
The thing is, that's already been done so many times.
I'd say too many times.
And the whole thing with the soldier character, her being a genetically modified human who's been trained in all sorts of martial arts and stuff like that, that's right out of Halo. You know that Halo stuff that I covered before I went away?
Yeah, that's not even like Halo came up with that.
Exactly. And then all the anti-vampire stuff and then being a vampire hunter, that's Blade.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was underwhelming at best. I wouldn't say it was absolute tripe since I've already read the first issue. Maybe it develops in a different way, but it's at least better than Twilight.
Yeah, and I feel like I can't remember that one thing Donny Cates did that I liked, the Debt Collectors one.
Oh, damn it. Because you got me reading that as well, didn't you?
Yeah, anyway, he did a thing about superhero debt collectors that was really good.
Oh, yes. It was because I said we pair it up with Next Wave, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, I was say, that was really good, but I feel like I haven't read anything from him since. It's really wowed me all that much.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway,
over to you.
Yeah, well, I think that can probably lead us nicely into things that have wowed me.
Okay.
Grumble versus the Goon. So this is, I mean, Grumble is not a franchise I'm familiar with, but this story is written by Rafer Roberts and Eric Powell, with art by Mike Norton and Eric Powell.
And is this the Goon as in the Goon, the Goon?
Oh yeah, as in this starts in the world of Grumble, I assume, which seems to be some kind of like post-apocalyptic wasteland, but magic, where Tara the Elf and her companion Eddie the Talking Dog, who wears a bowling shirt, are on the run from an iguana biker gang, and they manage to evade them, put the magic token they have into a chicken-operated prize machine, and get teleported to the seedy 1920s world of the Goon.
See, this just sounds... Remember that Frank Miller one that I covered a while ago called Samurai Cowboy Who'll Stop the Rain? Where you had the samurai cowboy up against a giant pig that flew and had swords tied to its udders?
I do not remember that. Possibly intentionally.
This sounds a bit like that.
I guess that, but also with a sense of humour. Because basically the central conflict comes from the fact that the Goon has made his pal Frankie possibly the worst human in existence, the town dog catcher. And so as soon as Tara and Eddie appear, he grabs Eddie and tries to take him off to be put down. Well, I guess in Frankie's defence, Eddie did try and shiv him.
It's not the usual method of attack for a dog.
It's for a dog who's got a shiv.
Yeah, but for a normal human dog, a normal earth dog, it's not really the chosen method of attack. And if a dog tried to shiv me, my first question would be, well, you know, what exactly are you?
Anyway, don't worry, it all works out fine. You know, everyone realises the misunderstanding, they punch some hobos, Goon goes back to Grumble's world, punches some iguanas, everything's hunky-dory. It's so good. I love him. I should go back and find more Goon.
Yes.
It's one of those books that I kind of forget about a lot.
Everyone forgets about the Goon.
But you shouldn't, because he's great. He's just like a massive slab of man meat. Now, speaking of massive slabs of man meat, this also includes the first series of the first issue, even of a series that you like a lot, Rob, and I'm quite fond of as well, Hillbilly.
Oh,
because that's Eric Powell as well.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So this just collects the Troll, the Serpent, and the Princess.
It's a good story, isn't it?
It is, yeah, where he has to rescue a princess from an ogre.
Yeah.
But then turns out Princess is just a pig.
Yep.
Eric Powell, I'm sorry, I forget that, like, you're fantastic at comic books.
Yeah, Hillbilly is just, it's a perennial favourite of mine. I need to read more, but there's never enough.
I know. Again, it all goes back to the comics take time and money, and I have neither.
Yes. Oh, but Hillbilly is such a great idea, such a great concept, and such, it's so well done. It's so dark, so dark, it's so good. You remember that movie The Witches, where they turned the little boy into a mouse?
Yeah, I did. It's not exactly an unknown movie.
Yeah, but you know, you remember how terrifying that scene where the witches turn, you know, where the transformation of the witches, that scene.
Yeah, I know. Every child knows that. It's kind of one of those rites of passage.
Yeah. Hillbilly is kind of like that in comic book form.
Yeah, yeah, that, I get that. Anyway, have you got anything else to cover?
Yes. I have Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man, both of which are from Ahoy Comics. And Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man, they're both by Tom Payer, with art by Russ Brown, and colours by Andy Troy, and letters by Rob Streen. There's also a story in here called Captain Ginger and Poe vs. the Black Cat, which I'll cover later on. But first is Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man. And this is a bit of an odd one, because I'm not familiar with the character of Dragonfly or Dragonfly Man, both of whom are basically the same character, but in different realities. On Earth Omega, in Fortune City, for example, Dragonfly Man is there. I think it's Dragonfly Man. Might just be the Dragonfly. On Earth Alpha, in Fortune City, you have Dragonfly, or Dragonfly Man, but yeah, Dragonfly Man is on Earth Alpha, sorry, and Earth Omega is Dragonfly. And Earth Omega seems to be the grittier, hard-boiled version of the two. You have the same story being played out in different realities involving the Tommy Gun and the Chief of Police. And in one reality, the Chief of Police is basically trying to con Dragonfly Man because of various things. But in the other reality, the gritty reality, Dragonfly is having to fight against the Chief of Police in order to protect his city and his identity from the Chief of Police, who's basically afraid of the Tommy Gunner. And so you have this thing where the Dragonfly is kind of a bit like Batman, only, you know, willing to cross the line.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. Don't.
I'm physically upset having to hear all this.
Yeah. Then you go on to Captain Ginger, which is a story about space cats that I didn't really understand. It was talking about the history about Captain Ginger, who is a character that I am totally unfamiliar with and don't know anything about. And then you have the final story, which is the surreal Poe and the Black Cat, which involves Edgar Allan Poe and a group of friends playing badminton and him getting angry with a black cat and killing it right at the beginning. I suppose it's one of those underground comic type attempts, but I don't understand why it's in this little collection of comics. I've got to say, of the three on offer here, Dragonfly, Dragonfly Man, or The Wrong Earth, maybe that's what they're calling it, that was pretty well drawn, but I really didn't understand what the point of it was. Whether it was a moment in time, whether it was one of those things that's part of an extended overarching plot, I don't know. And so it's just kind of there, like a lump that just won't go away. Hopefully if I ignore it, it will.
I hate everything you've said. So, what I've also been reading is Captain Canuck, which is all about who is the new Captain Canuck.
Is there a new Captain Canuck?
Yes. He is a different man to the other one. who apparently died fighting aliens.
So basically, look, Avengers Endgame then. I finally saw it.
Yeah, well done you. But yeah, this is very much just a Captain Kanak was a thing. Apparently he died fighting some aliens, now there's a new guy. There's a bunch of heroes. They seem somewhat derivative of other heroes, but also they're Canadian, except some of them aren't now. It just seems very nothing you haven't seen elsewhere.
Yeah, Captain Kanak, I never really understood as a character in the first place. It just seemed like the Canadians wanted their own version of Captain America.
Yeah, which, sure, why not? It's a big enough country. Guess that can support Captain Kanak comics. Good for them. Anyway, then there was also some another Boom Studios Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Firefly comics. And yeah, Buffy's just very Buffy. She stunned the vampires. I think this is a reboot, because in one story she meets like Xander and Willow for the first time.
Isn't Buffy the Vampire Slayer a bit long in the tooth now?
Yeah, you'd think so, but I mean, I guess you can always reboot these things for a new audience, which, fair enough. I'm going to admit it, I was never super into Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Neither was I. I actually preferred Angel as a series.
Yeah, I feel like Angel at least was the one I invested more in. Buffy, I kind of just watched the occasional episode, enjoyed it, but never really felt the urge to follow the series.
Angel at least tried to play with the format a bit more. And they had one episode where Angel got turned into a puppet. Or a Muppet, I should say.
Anyway, then the Firefly one is also Boss Moon, Birth of a Unificator. And this is, it's basically just an origin story for who I assume is going to be the villain in the Firefly comics. Because she's some ex-soldier who's hired to hunt down brown coats. Hey, I know a guy who wears a brown coat. It's Mal. He's one of the main characters in Firefly.
Yes.
I guess that's setting up a conflict.
Thing is, why hunt down brown coats? Is that anyone wearing a brown coat or just brown coats from the war?
Oh, yeah, no. It is specifically brown coats, the opposing side in the war, what lost. Then, finally, I had Starburns Presents, which is a bunch of different comics. Some good, some not. Well, I say some good. Well, some setting up comics that seem like they would be good. Like Nasquatch, which is Bigfoot, who like steals some dude's Chevrolet and starts going on the run from the government, but also doing sweet car moves. I'd read that. I'd also
see, that just sounds like the most horrible video game ever made. Oh god.
Which admittedly has quite a fun setup. Basically, there's two wrestlers about to have a title match for champion of the world. And one of them in kind of typical heel boasting. Yells about, he doesn't even care about champion of the world. He's already champion of the galaxy. Cut to the planet WrestleTopia, where just a bunch of wrestle aliens are like, and so Earth has declared its champion. We must go face them.
See, that actually appeals to me for one specific reason. Do you remember T-Bot and the rest of the wrestlers from Megas XLR?
And I don't remember the wrestlers.
You don't remember the fighters? You remember that you had that little... it was kind of like MODOK, but Elvis at the same time?
Yes, I definitely remember the like weird Elvis robots.
Yeah. Basically, he ran this gladiatorial tournament, and he wanted Coop to take Megas and fight in it.
I'm starting to kind of vaguely remember it now, but not enough to remember the wrestle robots.
When they did the revenge plot of his, he brought his own robot called T-Bot, who was basically Mr. T as a robot.
Excellent. What's not excellent are the other stories in this. Hellicious Pick Your Perdition. And it's about like a hotel in hell, maybe, or a band whose lead singer is dead. Then there's also B-Squad, A Little Mogwai Told Me, and Griffin, Galaxy's Most Wanted, Chapter 1. And all three of these, I feel like they're very much continuations of ongoing series where I don't have enough background information to know what the hell's going on.
A Little Mogwai Told Me.
Yeah, it's like army commandos, but then like Mogwai you know, the
Gremlins.
Things that become the Gremlins from Gremlins.
Yeah.
The bad commandos attacked them, maybe. I don't know. I didn't really understand what was going on and did not care for it.
Sounds like me with my last one.
And yeah, that's it. That's kind of the dregs.
Well, I mean, on my part, I had dregs left over from the Dark Age, and Midnight Sky was actually a bit of an oddity. The actual Midnight Sky story was interesting because it was all about a mother protecting her family, and it reminded, and that was interesting because of the angle. But Dark Age was just basically, oh, look, something happened to all the metal in the world. The world is now another Dark Age. Everyone's gone back to this medieval-type feudal system.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah. So, that's your lot for this week. What did you read during Free Comic Book Day? Do let us know what interesting things you discovered.
Did you read Starburns Presents? Did you understand it? If so, please tell me how.
Yeah.
And what happened.
Yeah, I will
and say... And for why.
I will say that Starburns just sounds painful. Yeah, let us know what you read during Free Comic Book Day. We are interested in finding out. If there was anything that was that we missed that was interesting. So let us know in the comments below. And if you want to check out any of our other shows or any of our previous episodes of Four Panel, you can find them all on our website or on Audioboom or Apple Podcasts. You'll also find our Patreon and our shop on our website as well, thegeekshow.co.uk. If you're listening through any kind of podcast aggregator, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure, and it does help us improve.
It does.
Yes. Anyway, that's your lot for this week. Until next time, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.